Produced by women about women, Powerful Women Let's Talk is a series of interviews with women who are trailblazers and have helped shape our world, transforming who we are and how we live. Powerful Women Let's Talk is made possible in part by Family Fair, keeping it real.
Hello, everyone. It's time for one of my favorite things, and it's another edition of Powerful Women Let's Talk. I'm Jennifer Moss. As always, we're grateful for you joining us as we find out about more outstanding women in our community and beyond. So we thank you for joining us and tuning in today. So today's powerful woman is Jo Ellen Clary. Now get ready, because this is going to be a lot of fun. Today's guest really is the epitome of what powerful women is all about. So by profession, a literary scholar, Jo Ellen Clary has kind of redirected her path into the world of local women's history here in Grand Rapids, where she has been dedicated to researching and crediting early area women as community builders. She also has had many awards and has been on boards with the Grand Rapids Historical Society, the Grand Rapids Historical Commission, among many others. So with that, we are very happy to welcome Jo Ellen to today's edition of Powerful Women Let's Talk.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Yes, it's so glad to have you. We're so glad to have you here. So thanks so much for joining us again. Going to be difficult to get everything in, a lot of bases here to cover, but to start, you are the co-president and director of the Greater Grand Rapids Women's History Council, and you just informed me of something very special, and that is you've been there 30 years.
I have been.
That's pretty exciting.
I came to Grand Rapids because my husband took a job at Grand Valley, and I was also in the English department there, decided it wasn't a good fit, and I learned about the Greater Grand Rapids Women's History Council. And I've been there ever since. So I sort of turned my more formal academic path as a narrative theorist into digging out local women. But I had a great model in a cultural historian from Grand Rapids.
Oh, wonderful. And we're going to get to that in a moment. I just want to mention, too, Powerful Women actually started with a tie-in to a PBS presentation last summer,
yes.
Summer of 2020, which, of course, honored the 100th anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment, guaranteeing and protecting, mm-hmm. of course, women's constitutional right to vote. And so it's very fitting and awesome to have you here today. And, you know, we want to look back at some of the things you've done with the Women's History Council here in West Michigan in Grand Rapids. Course, we could talk for hours about this, just on what you've done at the History Council. But give us an idea kind of some of the work that you've been doing.
Sure. Let's stick with the vote for first. In fact, the first major project that I undertook during the 1990s with the Women's History Council had to do with documenting the fact that the whole national suffrage movement came to Grand Rapids and met in 1899 at St. Cecilia. It's not like that hadn't been known before, but not much had been done with it, and it had been totally forgotten. Mm-hmm. So I was really starting from scratch, and that doing so much women's history is like that. You're pioneering where you shouldn't have to, because lots of women were very well known in the past. They were all over the newspapers, but they haven't made it into city histories. The same thing with this. So we did a huge celebration, centennial celebration in 1999 at St. Cecilia. Since then, readying for 2020 for mm-hmm. the centennial of the 19th Amendment, we created a digital suffrage exhibit, which is now on our website. And in the meantime, the most important discovery was a woman named Emily Burton Ketchum. Burton as in Burton Avenue. Mm-hmm. She was born in Grand Rapids in 1838. Mm. She turned out to be probably predominant suffragist in Michigan.
Really?
And West Michigan had never been credited at all.
I was going to say, it was noted nowhere that
as suffrage leaders. No, I mean, we found her family, mm-hmm. scrapbooks, and that was before Google, before being able to search newspapers
right,
on the
right.
internet, so things have changed. But it's really turned Michigan's women's suffrage history on its head. And that's what's so wonderful about digging in where you live, getting details. Not only do you learn about local women, but you learn who they were on the state level and the national level. Emily Burton Ketchum sat in 1894 in Washington, D.C. for a photo of the national suffrage leaders with Susan B. Anthony, etc. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and still, who knew? It's still very, very hard to get attention paid to women's history and honor women from the past. They're just aren't structures that are working.
It's like the city's best kept secret sometimes, and it thanks to you and many others at the History Council, it
many
comes
others.
To light, right?
Well, and for example, by accident, a friend found an allusion to a woman in the late 1890s, Elizabeth Eaglesfield, attorney at law, a letter to the editor in the Grand Rapids Press. And we actually covered four states looking for this woman, digging her out. She was one of the first women's attorneys in the nation. And to date, the biggest study of national women attorneys was that in those days, they had desks in the backs of their husbands' offices. This woman was a wild woman. She really, really tried in Grand Rapids to make a living in the law, which was much harder to get into, by the way, than into medicine. There were many more women physicians in the 1890s. So
really?
They're just great studies. So basically, her autobiography raises huge questions about a lot of the assumptions that have been made about the early history of women attorneys. So digging in locally, it expands. It's like dropping a pebble in the pond. It's been great fun.
I was going to say, do you enjoy that? But also, so how important would you say the work of the Women's History Council is in bringing to light so many women here in Grand Rapids, in West Michigan? That history, like you said, not even acknowledged in many areas, even though there are a lot of different, maybe some pictures here or there, but the whole story. I love the whole story coming to light.
We're working on that. It's crucial. When it's the other historical organizations, I'm going to be a little tough here. sort of interested in women's history, but not particularly. And a lot of local historians and local people are interested more in buildings and that kind of thing. And assume that every bit of women's history is political. Well, doing women's history is a political act, but it's not just political history. Women's social histories, economic histories, religious histories, educational histories are absolutely different from men's. And that's really not even accepted yet. Well, we've done that. We have a history of the city, but without acknowledging a lot of the women builders. So it's very piecemeal. The Women's History Council is a volunteer organization. So we spend a lot of time training people to research. We have people doing wonderful work who haven't written a footnote since high school. And so both getting information, then getting it out there has been a trick. And we're better at it some years than others, just depending on who has time and who's working with us.
Again, volunteer, you all are doing a wonderful, wonderful thing for this community and for just enriching women's lives. And again, just like Powerful Women, the idea is to allow that information to come out that's not necessarily known. You know, the background and the backdrop for some people is very interesting to find. And it's in our backyard. And that's the important thing I love to emphasize.
Yep, absolutely. One more quick example, just how empowering some of this can be. Well, on the way, let me note that when I first arrived in town, I was informed that no women had run for the county commission until the 1970s, and they won, and that they were the first women seated on the county commission. We've been taking the next step from suffrage history and working up an entire electoral history of the city's women, and that's not true. Women were running from the very moment they could for all kinds of positions in public office. And in 1930, a woman named Grace Ames Van Hoosen won a seat on the county commission. She was among 75 guys, and she served for 8 years during the Depression.
The 1930s.
Now, I believe the 1970s women were the next women. So that's how women's history can go.
Absolutely. So people think they have history from the 70s there. You're looking at that particular one. But it really started in the 30s. And that is what the History Council does, though. It uncovers those things. And you said you like to dig. tell me one of your, you just mentioned a couple, but give me one of your really favorite things that you've discovered that maybe hit home personally to you where you're like, this is really cool.
Very briefly, too. A woman named Constance Rourke is the cultural historian I alluded to later. And when I quit Grand Valley, we weren't really intending to stay in town. Here I am.
Still here, right?
But early on, I have a younger husband who hadn't had as much of an adult life yet as I had. And so Constance Rourke was a cultural historian who died. She fell and hit her head on the ice in 1940 and was eulogized in the Saturday Review of Literature. She was the cover girl on their magazine. She was extremely important. Mm-hmm. And she sat in a little house next to Paddock Place and wrote 7 major books on American cultural history, was eulogized by poet William Carlos Williams, all kinds of American intellectuals at the time. When I moved here around 1990, most people in Grand Rapids hadn't heard of her. So she was both a model for me, and it was a joy to mm-hmm. pound people over the head a little bit. But also, more recently, it was just amazing when I really went looking to find that in the 1890s, there were African-American women's clubs. In the pages.
In the 1890s? Yep. In the 1800s?
And, yeah, I'm a member of the Grand Rapids Study Club, and I can tell you that when reporting to the African-American women there, who had just assumed that African-American women especially didn't mm-hmm. appear in the newspapers, had no cultural clout, were in there writing editorials to the press, or the Herald, about the press for running an editorial from North Carolina. This was at the beginning of Jim Crow. Pounding them. And in 1906 or 7, out of a population of 700 African Americans, there were 5 women's clubs, which hosted the State Federation of Colored Women in Grand Rapids.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and we shouldn't have to be pioneering. We shouldn't have to be trailblazers when we know that there have been people whose shoulders we can stand on before. Mm-hmm. So just that, it was just like a dawning. You know, it's a kind of empowering moment to realize this really has happened before. Something happened in the meantime, but mm-hmm. we can pick up on it. That's great.
And looking at that history, too, has to make you feel, like you said, it is empowering, and it is great to note, even as we look at current finds of different historical measure, to know that that already occurred, and to think of the bravery, you know, of so many women who have done amazing things.
Well, I'm old enough to be able to testify. I graduated from high school in 1965, on the cusp of the 50s, really, as lots of documentaries from last summer illustrated. The Vote, by the way, that PBS did was wonderful, but also RBG.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
All of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's hugest lawsuits were during the 1970s. In this course of women's work. Hillary, I'm one day younger than Hillary Clinton.
Oh, really?
And
wow.
Mrs. America, all about the 1970s, mm-hmm. where just all kinds of things exploded and women's history began. Women's history, really as a discipline, has not been done for very long. So mm-hmm. as a local group, we can be fairly proud that we've done as much as we have, because even nationally, it's maybe in the adolescent stage.
Yeah, but we all thank you for presenting this information to us and having such a wonderful group of women that work there at the History Council. So as we look and talk about powerful women, and as you look at, you know, you've looked at so many, we would call them powerful women, those pioneers, right?
Yes.
So, but as you look at that, what are some of the barriers that you personally have potentially encountered, you know, looking at women's history, representation, and the like? What would you say some of your barriers may have been?
Well, I just alluded to the fact that I graduated from high school on the cusp of the 50s, mm-hmm. and expectations for women were extremely low. And the birth control pill had been developed in the early 60s, but most women still didn't, you know, certainly the culture did not think in terms of women being able to control their bodies. Mm-hmm. So I didn't worry about that much. I came from a family situation where we had moved a lot. I grew up in an area where neither of my parents had cultural roots. I lived in 7 different towns and cities in 7 years. So I was always the new kid.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that I just had to kind of be
in there. I was going to say, you learned to be tough.
Yeah, in there slugging a little bit. So yeah. I didn't notice some of these things until later. But I was, you know, I went into student teach when I was an undergraduate. I did a teaching certificate. And my master teacher told me later, she said, I thought, oh, no, here comes another trouble blonde.
Oh, my word.
So even she, a quite enlightened mm-hmm. woman, just suggests certain kinds of barriers. But that wasn't that big a deal, I guess. I guess I just always felt I always kind of had some hurdles. Mm-hmm. So that I think I developed a kind of voice early on, and I can joke a little bit. I remember being at a camp when I was probably in seventh or eighth grade, and some question was put out there. If you could be any person in history, who would you be? And I immediately said Cleopatra, a combination of Cleopatra and Queen Elizabeth. And I'm not sure I even knew that much about them then. Mm-hmm. But I guess I wanted to do things. I've just always been kind of focused on that. I didn't want to waste my time mm-hmm. and be kind of purpose-driven.
Absolutely. So, and kind of pegging off of what you just said, as part of the council's history information, I saw it stated, since 1990, we have worked to give women of the past a proper voice in history. And you just mentioned your voice. So what did it take, though? I know you were tough and you moved a lot. What did it take to find that inner voice so that you knew and were comfortable in your own skin as you move forward? Maybe not knowing at that time earlier on that you would end up at the Women's History Council and looking at other mm-hmm. pioneering women. But what was it that helped you find your voice?
I think I probably became an English major in college because I found power in the literature that I was reading and studying. I think that it showed other ways of living, and just reading and writing. I'm very much an academic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a foot in the academic world as well as the popular world. And so I think I've been useful to the council in mentoring, you know, kind of trying to help identify people's strengths and help them do something with them. But in academic study, you're always looking for something that hasn't been noticed before, mm-hmm. digging something out. So I came by that honestly. And in my literary studies, I started noticing that there was always something about the past in the centers of some extremely important novels that were being written. And of course, we're all shaped by the past. So I became especially attuned to the historical. And I think that was just a natural move, so that I perhaps have been energetic in trying to find what's been hidden, because it has to be there. And so along the way, writing especially, but writing and speaking, that's what you do mm-hmm. in academic life.
And you kind of gave you your voice so you could.
Yes, teaching.
Absolutely. So when you look at that, and again, coupling it with your work at the History Council, what leadership traits do you like to see? You know, those who you work with, perhaps even those you mentor, like you said, you mentor some, and maybe you want to see them kind of go down a certain path or to really find their voice as well. How do you instill that leadership, and what type of leadership qualities are you looking for in people?
Some energy, mm-hmm. focus, but a real dedication, because a lot of things can be worked on if someone knows, has a real interest, even if they're flailing about a little bit, not quite sure what to do with themselves, matching up a desire with venue is the word that started to come out of my mouth, but with matching a capability with opportunity to use it.
Absolutely. That's good. So, and as you do all of this, and you've been busy at work, and you're still kind of at the helm here of things, what are the ways that you find to relax? I mean, you know, working women and others, even those, so many women at home, whatever you're working to do, whether you're at home with children, because that's certainly work, as we all know to be, or whatever you're doing, how do you find ways to relax? And, you know, with family, with friends, because all of us look for tidbits from other people to say, okay, oh, maybe I could incorporate that into my downtime. Even though sometimes we feel like we don't have a lot.
And especially when some people say, oh, I read to relax. Well, I'm a professional reader.
So. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I do, but it's not always entirely relaxing. You know, in college, this is very early on, I became a runner in the late 60s. And I think the woman who first ran sneaked her way into the Boston Marathon was my age. So some physical activity mm-hmm. has always been necessary to counter, you know, when your work is, and you know this to some extent, if your work is at a computer, mm-hmm. You're sitting a lot, you really do need to move. And so I have found, you know, fun ways to do that. And I ran until I decided I was going to have large joint problems. Mm-hmm. So I still get outside a lot. And my husband's in academics also, so we kind of have to be partners and beat on each other to do it.
No fun.
But we're opera fans, mm-hmm. so theater, And I've been in a couple of things in Grand Rapids. So I used to lead a much more active theater life than I have since I've been in Grand Rapids. But that kind of thing. And we travel. Mm-hmm. A lot of our travel has always been for work, for conferences, but we've always managed to tack things on as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. You got to enjoy that moment as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Jolynn, what makes you laugh?
Well, a lot of things, but my husband predominantly. He, for example, he just saw on Facebook yesterday that some extended family member with this new little baby was named Oakley Ann. So the next thing he was doing was finding the Ethel Merman rendition of Anything You Can Do from Annie Oakley.
Oh my
And
word.
Sticking it up.
That's funny.
So he keeps things pretty funny.
Absolutely. I love it. So, you know, a lot of times women are looking for a word of encouragement. Do you have any favorite sayings or maybe a motto that kind of comes to mind when you want to encourage someone or just something that you use for yourself?
You know, Emily Burton Ketchum, that suffragist I mentioned, had a sort of mantra. She would always say, "Let us work earnestly." Hmm. And I think, you know, balancing play in with work is mm-hmm. important. Having a light touch, sort of a light attitude about some things, even when your commitment is deadly serious, is important. And I think some people would probably call me a little intense, maybe driven. So I think that in terms of words of encouragement, just work earnestly.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I like that.
Touch some core of yourself. Be earnest and go out into the world.
Mm-hmm. And try to do what you can. Make that statement, yeah, that impact.
They're baby steps. I mean, they're always processes, ways of process to
help someone along the way.
Right.
All of those things.
But that kind of earnestness or dedication to something will really take people a long way and end up in accomplishment.
Absolutely.
Which will then set up other accomplishments.
Such as you have done at the Women's History Council.
Thank you very much.
That accomplishment there. And so speaking with one of our powerful women who's right here in West Michigan, Jo Ellen Cleary, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Jennifer. It's been a pleasure.
Well, I also want to thank all of you, our listeners there, for joining us for this edition of Powerful Women Let's Talk. I'm Jennifer Moss.
Produced by women, about women. These powerful podcasts focus on powerful women and how their strength transforms who we are and how we live. Want to hear more Powerful Women Let's Talk? Get additional interviews at wgvu.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate and subscribe. Powerful Women Let's Talk is made possible in part by Family Fair, keeping it real. It is produced by WGVU at the Meyer Public Broadcast Center at Grand Valley State University. The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of WGVU, its underwriters, or Grand Valley State University.